Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ripple of determination to chart a new way forward, to offer an unapologetically progressive alternative to the Bloomberg era.
The prison system has been used as a de facto mental health system for too many individuals.
I want him to do what he knows how to do best, to use the best technology and tactics to focus our efforts on the criminals, on the problem areas, on the hot spots, to make our streets and neighborhoods even safer, but to avoid focusing resources where they don't belong, which is on innocent, hardworking New Yorkers, particularly our young men of color.
Advocates report card, subject, crime. All this week, we're checking in with advocates on the big New York City issues to see how they think Mayor de Blasio is doing after 6 months in office. Crime is a tricky one for a progressive because all mayors have to keep crime down, but this one also claims to be capable of better police-community relations than the last two mayors had. So how's he walking that line? With me now is Monifa Bandelli, organizer with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and Communities United for Police Reform, two advocacy groups that have long been critical of stop and frisk and other of the NYPD's policing tactics. Monifa, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
And so far in 2014, serious felonies in the city have dropped 3% over the same period last year, with homicides down 10%. But shooting incidents and shooting victims have risen by about that much, and particularly parts of the Bronx and Brooklyn are real trouble spots. So I wonder from your perspective if you read anything into those stats, or is the sample size just too small to lay any of this, good or bad, at the feet of Bratton and de Blasio here in the middle of July?
Right now, we really do think it's just too early to tell what some of these numbers are alluding to. When we look at entire years in the past, like in 2011, when stop and frisk was at its highest, shootings were actually at a higher rate than they are currently within these first 6 months. So the numbers, of course, we want them to be much better. I live in Brooklyn. We want safe communities. You were talking earlier about the conundrum that progressives are in. But we know that we can get to that place and have our civil rights protected.
Stop and frisk was essentially a gun removal program. Could the end of stop and frisk and the spike in shootings be related?
Absolutely not. And we really are nervous about that type of talk. You know, like I just said, when stop and frisk was at its highest rate in 2011, there were more shootings than there have already been in these past 6 months. And I can't underscore that enough, that there's really no connection, because what we found, and not just advocates like the ACLU, but even the Attorney General's office, found that the number of returns, guns recovered from stop and frisk, were extremely low. So it was essentially a failed program because so many people were stopped who hadn't done anything, and there were all these unlawful stops.
By the way, later in the show, we'll be talking with Michael Aronson from the Daily News editorial board. They published a piece yesterday calling for a review of stop and frisk numbers and the spike in murders. So we'll get that perspective in about 20 minutes. But it does seem there is at least speculation out there that perhaps the end of stop and frisk as a gun removal program has something to do with the spike in shootings. It sounds like the stat you would have me throw back at him, if it's verified, is that there were actually more shootings in 2011 than in this six-month period when stop and frisk was at its height. Am I hearing you correctly?
That's absolutely correct. And so, and then you're comparing, when people are comparing to last year or in the final year of the Bloomberg administration, stops had actually gone down on those years. So if you're looking at the height of stop and frisk, if you want to say that stop and frisk is a gun removal program that is successful, you will find that shootings were higher during the height of stop and frisk.
And by the way, the stats, as we're reading them, does show this to be the second lowest year for shootings on record. It's just that last year was the lowest. So for what it's worth, it's not like it's, you know, 1977. So during the election, de Blasio famously said he was the only candidate who would, quote, end the stop and frisk era. He even used it in this campaign ad.
There are hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who've never experienced stop and frisk. Shirley and I have talked to Dante many times about the fact that someday he will be stopped. Parents all over the city are having that conversation with their kids.
Bill de Blasio, the only candidate to end a stop and frisk era that targets minorities.
So just on that premise, Manifa, is the stop and frisk era over as you see it?
We have not achieved mission accomplished by far. Some important steps have been made. The Community Safety Act, which we were fighting for, which would put additional bans on profiling and put an inspector general in place, was passed, and de Blasio and his administration helped to make sure that the lawsuit against that bill was dropped. But we still have a long way to go. We're really just at the beginning. And the most important piece, one of the most important pieces of our campaign, was the Floyd versus New York City lawsuit, where a judge ruled that there'd be a joint remedy process that would take place where community and the city and the police would sit down and map out a new era. That hasn't happened yet. So we're really not at the end of the stop and frisk era. What we are is at the beginning of the planning stages of talking about ending the stop and frisk era.
Advocates report card, people's report card. How's the de Blasio administration doing on crime and respectful policing after 6 months? 212-433-WNYC. Douglas in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, good morning, Brian.
What do you think?
Well, I joined the conversation later, so I don't know who the woman is who was speaking, but I definitely agree with her in that there is no connection between the rise in shootings and
the end of stop and frisk.
Yeah, going down.
Can I tell everybody, I think you identified yourself to our screener as former NYPD?
Yes, Lieutenant. Now, my thing is, it is a small gap, 6 months. But having said that, it is still the second lowest. You just said the second lowest shootings, you know, within the last 30 years. I mean, crime is going to go up at some point. You can't always continue to go down. And the stop the question and frisk was good, but it was a tool that was abused. You know, I remember we would have thousands of stops. And when you're just asking for stops, you're just going to end up stopping anybody and just creating friction between the police department and the people you're serving. You know, it is a good tool, but it's got to be used properly.
Doug, thank you very much for your call. Call us again. Another police officer perspective, a different one, I think. Howard in the Bronx. Howard, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, how's it going?
All right.
I'm just commenting on what the advocate had said earlier. You know, it is a very short window. And to say, to just declare that there's no connection like that is, I think, reveals her ideological biases as opposed to the research. I mean, if you look at Frank Zimring, who wrote the book Police in the City, he definitely thought that it had something to contribute to the overall decline in crime, the Stop Question First policy. You have seen a sustained increase in shootings focused in the Bronx and Brooklyn. And those are the precincts that drive the violence. Those are the precincts that have historically produced the most shootings, the most homicides, the most robberies and felony assaults. So it's a troubling development, but you can't point after such a short period of time. Crime is far too complex to say stop question frisk contributes to the rise in shootings. But at the same time, it is far too complex for an advocate who definitely has an ideological bias to declare it has nothing to do with it. And then, you know, you do have various criminologists who studies various statistical surveys, everything, like Zimring is an example. On the other side, you have Fagan. And they, you know, you can talk about the impact, but you can't just declare that it had nothing to do with it.
So, and
on the streets, I tell you now, there are a lot more guns and there are a lot more shootings.
But it sounds like if you're going to take a position that it's too early to tell that there's any, you know, actual repercussions or actual statistical connection, then it would be too early in either direction, too early to say that crime is down overall because, you know, the Bratt and de Blasio policies are working, but then too early to say at the same time that shootings are up because stop and frisks are down.
But I never said that, though. I'm not trying to say, you know, I think overall, too, I think advocates like the person you have on, their target isn't stop, question, frisk. It's much larger proactive policing. I mean, you see it in the organization she's part of when they talk about over-police neighborhoods. Police resources go to where the violence is. The neighborhoods aren't over-policed because the police want to go in there and pick on people. The police, they have a large amount of police resources devoted to them because of the centers of violence. And to ignore the threat of interpersonal violence that the people, the citizens, have and they face day in, day out is ignore reality.
Howard, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And my guest, by the way, you absolutely can. And
okay.
I just, because it's been a while, I just want to tell everybody who you are, my guest. And this is framed all week as we look at different issues and de Blasio after 6 months as an advocate series. So, yes, my guest is definitely an advocate. Manifa Bendeli, organizer with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and Communities United for Police Reform. And Manifa, go ahead and respond.
Sure. I really want to underscore the point that we are all about community safety. I mean, we live in the Bronx. We live in Brooklyn. We are from these neighborhoods. And, you know, our diverse coalition absolutely understands what some of the issues are in our communities. But we also understand that there are many anti-violence programs and initiatives that have worked, that can work if they're scaled up, that do not impact and take away people's civil liberties. Every community should enjoy the same civil rights as any other community. There's programs like Man Up in East New York, Brooklyn, and other anti-violence initiatives that we could also scale up where the community can play a role. And then the other piece I wanted to say was that you talk about all of these people who've been unlawfully stopped and frisked. What is the impact on a community's safety when you have civil rights violations? What is the impact on a young person? How does it impact their grades? How does it impact someone going to work and whether or not they become unemployed and are able to feed their families? I think people are looking at this so narrowly, but when you really look at the big picture, when you have massive violations of civil rights targeted in specific communities, it really does a lot to destroy so many aspects of that community that don't have anything to do with that particular stop. You know, it's the person's entire day, it's their entire life. And so what we want are solutions. I don't think there's anyone in our coalition, or I haven't even spoken to anyone who's just like, well, we just don't want the community to be safe. We want the police to be gone. What we want are safe communities, but we want solutions that include us, and we want solutions that are effective.
And I thank both our police officer or former police officer guests for calling, interestingly, with different perspectives. And interestingly, what people are debating so far is a policy that's not in effect right now,
exactly,
which is stop, question, and frisk, which de Blasio vowed to end and is apparently being ended. So let's take our next caller on something.
But I just want to say that it hasn't ended totally. You know, I think that we're moving that direction, but people are still stopped, and there's still a disproportionate stops in certain neighborhoods. So I just wanted to put that out there.
So here's a caller with a question about a policy that is being implemented by de Blasio and Bratton, and it's Josmar in Harlem. Josmar, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you? I just had a question and a comment. Since we're talking about reform and how we're on the road to reform, is you had a caller, you had a guest a few weeks ago, talked about the West Harlem raids, which pointed to Operation Crew Cut, which is one of those social media-based operations by the police that, surprise, surprise, snagged 103 low-income kids from Harlem. And with Bill Bratton and the return of broken windows, how does that square up with the reform agenda going forward in the de Blasio administration?
103 alleged gang members, Bratton would say. So, Monifa, how does that look to you? Because Bratton is continuing to take a more cops approach in high-crime areas, flooding certain precincts with rookie cops, but he's vowed to pair them with more veteran officers, different than what was happening under Bloomberg, and says they will therefore take a more experienced, more community-minded approach. And, yes, they are advocating big raids in these public housing projects where the shootings are up, those particular ones, as particular gang crackdowns.
Yeah.
So where are you on this?
We're very disappointed in that, and it gets worse. Not only is he advocating these big raids, but he's also insistent on continuing the marijuana, low-level marijuana possession stops. I mean, there are so many things. There's so much unfinished business and a return to things that we fought against back when Bratton was here before that really raise a red flag for us. The raids was a clear red flag, but also now you see this tension around the marijuana arrests. I mean, we're living in a city where all the data, any report that any of the callers could pull out show that white residents use marijuana at a higher rate than African-American and Latino residents, hands down. No one's shown any other report, but somehow upwards to 80 to 90% of the people who are arrested for marijuana possession are African-American and Latino. So either white residents have found a way to use marijuana without possessing it, or we still have a police department that is targeting particular communities and particular individuals based on race. And the raids are very concerning. What's happening with homeless people on the trains concern us. So there's a lot of unfinished business. I mean, what we say is that we're really optimistic. We're cautiously optimistic. We want to continue to move forward with getting these remedies moving that the judge ordered that still haven't started yet. And we want to see what happens as the IG is able to get in office and pull the reports and make the recommendations that he's charged with doing. But it's important what Josman said, and we need activists and advocates in every corner of the city to constantly push the envelope because that's what's going to get us safe communities.
Let me stay on these big raids in selected NYCHA projects for a minute. The Manhattan DA told us in an interview after those West Harlem raids that a major sweep like that is more effective than individual arrests so as not to tip off other gang members who could then lie low. Do you disagree with that?
I totally disagree with that. What about all of the individuals who are picked up who are completely unaffiliated? How will that impact their lives? What path will that put them on? I mean, I think that people keep looking at this without really thinking about the impact of living in what can feel like a war zone, where not only do you have some safety issues with your neighbors and people on your block, but also the people who are hired to protect you. You also fear them. You also are not safe around them. So the space that puts so many scores of young people in and residents of low-income communities is not a safe one. It's not a healthy one. And so I really challenge people to look at the bigger picture here. There's got to be a way to work with communities to get safety and not terrorize entire groups of people.
But, of course, from Mayor de Blasio's perspective, safely is exactly the point. And here's a little bit of him talking about safety and those two raids.
Because for those two developments, they are a lot safer today because of this action, and you're going to see a lot more of these kind of actions wherever we are in a position to put together the evidence to do that kind of full sweep.
So, absolutely safe today, but the wounds that it may have opened up in that community, in those buildings of people who were terrorized by that raid, we don't know what that's going to bring. And that's what we really challenge. That's why we want to be in these conversations, because there's young people there who are now feeling like what, okay? So, I mean, those are the types of conversations that we need to have. You're safe in the moment, of course. If you arrest every single person on a floor in a building, then, yeah, that floor in that building is really safe at this moment, right? But as people come back and people who are wrongfully arrested, who they're not going to go to the police, and there's always going to be problems wherever people live, let's look at the big picture here. What impact does that have on all the residents? And that's really what we're challenging.
By the way, do you have a theory as to why the increase in shootings does seem to be mostly in public housing projects? Is that kind of random, or is something going on in the projects right now?
I don't know. You know, I really don't have, like we said, it's too short of a time period. We do know what the overall drivers of crime and violence are. You know, we know that it has to do with employment. It has to do with schools. I mean, there's all these huge structural issues that drive crime and violence. And a lot of that is concentrated in public housing. And so, you know, just philosophically
right.
looking at
it. But last year, too, and the year before that and the year before that.
Yeah. So we have a short window of time, and we'll see what's happening.
Mention that last week the mayor did announce that the city would devote more than $200 million to make NYCHA homes safer. In addition to the higher numbers of police we mentioned, there are initiatives like better lighting, removing sidewalk scaffolding where criminals tend to gather, youth programs. So obviously you're for things like that, right?
I'm totally for things like that, and also looking back at mass incarceration, looking at what kinds of things have happened in those communities that are now coming to the surface, right? When you move huge amounts of people from the community and people return without services. So those types of things are needed and more.
I want to mention one more thing, and as you talk about people returning from prison, it's kind of a good segue. I'm sure you saw, and lots of our listeners saw, the long piece in the Times yesterday about, if it's true as reported, shocking abuse of mentally ill prisoners in corrections officer brutality at Rikers Island, as apparently documented by the Times regarding many cases. We're actually going to speak with the authors of that investigative report on tomorrow's show. But here is Mayor de Blasio, not from yesterday, but from a month or so ago, when the reports about Rikers and the concentration of mentally ill New Yorkers there first started really emerging into public view.
We believe there's a fundamental problem in this city, in the state, in this country, that the prison system has been used as a de facto mental health system for too many individuals.
So that was a month ago. Do you want to react to that clip or the article in the Times, which seemed to describe a system in which, you know, with a large mentally ill population at Rikers, even the slightest provocation too often results in, you know, a disproportionate violent reaction by the corrections officers?
Absolutely, because, you know, they are not trained mental health practitioners, right? And I think that this is an important piece to look at, because what's happening in the prison many times, or in the jails, which Rikers is a jail, not a prison, is a microcosm of what happens in the communities. So just like we see law enforcement does not know how to deal with people with certain mental health issues, the same thing is going on in the community where I live, in Bed-Stuy, where, you know, police are not the solution to everything, and locking someone up is not the solution to everything. People need very specific individualized services for whatever is impacting them. And so I'm hoping that what's happening in the jails, of course, will end, but that it will shed light not only on what's happening there, but also in the streets. Everyone saw the video clip of the past couple of days of a mentally ill woman being beat down by the Chicago Highway Patrol California Highway Patrol out in California. And so there's this attention now, and we really need to look at it as to how we're treating people with mental illnesses, locking them up, calling the police. These things end tragically over and over again.
There's disturbing video on the Times site in conjunction with their piece, too. We'll have a link to that on our page tomorrow when we interview the investigative reporters on that story, so we'll do that then. This pretty much wraps up today's conversation in our Advocates Report Card series, as we're talking to advocates all this week pertaining to big New York City issues and the de Blasio administration at 6 months. We will also have First Deputy Mayor Anthony Shores on Friday's show to address these things himself. Tomorrow the topic will be jobs. And as we finish this one on crime, I just want to mention also, though we've been talking about the kinds of violent crime that we generally tend to think of in this category, the de Blasio administration reached out to us knowing we were going to do this segment, and they wanted to emphasize that when it comes to public safety, it's not just about the things we've been discussing, but also Vision Zero to curb traffic deaths right alongside things like ramping down stop and frisk. So a holistic approach to public safety as they see it. And just wanted to put that in there because it's all public safety, whether or not it's people victimizing others on the street the way we generally think of street crime. So Manifa Bondelli, organizer with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and Communities United for Police Reform, thank you for doing this with us today.
Thank you for having me.